Good afternoon, and thank you for joining the Oregon Employment Department for our weekly media briefing. A couple of quick reminders. This call is being recorded, and we will send it out after the briefing. You will be called upon to ask your questions in the order you RSVP to the event. Please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question. I know that some folks are joining us via phone only and have had issues with not being able to unmute themselves. If you are joining us by phone, please make sure to hit *6 to unmute yourself. Anyone experiencing technical difficulties or unable to ask their questions can send an email to oed_communications@oregon.gov. I would now like to turn it over to David Gerstenfeld, Acting Director of the Oregon Employment Department. Please go ahead, David.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. This week, we've continued our work to pay benefits to people awaiting their new benefits under the Continued Assistance Act. We're working to ensure people have their benefits as quickly as possible. We know how important these resources are to people, and we will continue to dedicate our employees' efforts to getting those claims out the door and into the hands of Oregon workers as fast as we can. While we've been paying most PUA benefits already, people who had used up all of their PUA benefits under the CARES Act or whose claim had been in effect for more than a year have more difficult situations. We're making programming adjustments so we can pay current and retroactive payments to those people. Our current best estimate is that PUA claimants who have not yet received their benefits under the Continued Assistance Act PUA extension will see the payments in the online claim system by this Saturday. As a reminder, those people will also receive payments for the additional $300 FUC payments for those weeks they are eligible. In last week's media statement, we informed you that we received new guidance from the U.S. Department of Labor stating that everyone in the PUA program is entitled to an additional 11 weeks of benefits under the Continued Assistance Act. That differs from earlier guidance we had received, which put the PUA cap at 50 weeks of benefits. One thing to note is that some people may still only receive 50 weeks of benefits. This has to do with how many weeks they have remaining on their claim when the federal government instructed us to turn off high extended benefits on December 12th. We've created a detailed page on our website to help people figure out when their 11 weeks start and end so they can know how many weeks of PUA benefits they have available. Visit unemployment.oregon.gov/PUA-extension for more information. The U.S. Department of Labor required us to change two questions and add a new question to the PUA weekly certification. The results of these mandated changes is that people who were employees and had their hours reduced no longer can receive PUA benefits unless they also qualify for PUA with one of the other eligibility reasons. People will still be eligible for PUA if they were laid off or lost their job because of a temporary or permanent business closure. This change does not impact people getting PUA benefits based on being self-employed. The other required change from the U.S. Department of Labor, though, is that those self-employed people do have an additional question they must answer. They can continue receiving PUA benefits if their business slowed down significantly due to COVID-19. When filling out the new PUA weekly certification, people can click the link next to each question to get more information on what the questions mean. We know people receive communication from us in many different ways, and they sometimes say different things. We try our hardest to put the most accurate and easy to understand information out there, and we can do this most easily online, whether it's on our website, social media, or in emails. Many letters are automatically generated and sent out by our computer system, and unfortunately, we are sometimes unable to modify what the letters say. I know this is confusing. I want to mention a couple of those letters today so people don't get confused. One has to do with expired PUA claims. When a claim reaches the one-year mark, a letter is automatically sent advising people to refile their claim. We do not want people getting this letter regarding the PUA claim to refile because it will slow down our ability to help other people with their benefits. Instead, they should just keep filing their weekly PUA certifications. Another example are determination letters. We're required by the U.S. Department of Labor to send termination letters to each person who files a PUA claim. The letters vary depending on the person's circumstances. We're going to put information on our website to help people understand the specific letter they receive. An important note is that no one is going to lose benefits that they are eligible for. We've previously talked about lost wages assistance, and we shared that some people received lost wages assistance benefits under that FEMA program that they were not eligible for. For some, this was because we made errors. For others, it was because they gave us inaccurate information or for a number of other reasons. FEMA requires us to take steps to collect lost wages assistance benefit overpayments. People who are overpaid these LWA benefits will start receiving notices this weekend. Included with the notices will be information on how to request a waiver of repaying the overpayments. The Continued Assistance Act provides FEMA with some flexibility to allow states to waive LWA overpayments if the overpayment was not the person's fault. We're waiting on direction from FEMA about when and how Oregon may be allowed to waive those overpayments. We will let claimants and the media know when we receive more information from FEMA, and certainly intend to use our discretion to waive those overpayments where we can. Anyone who receives a notice that they need to repay an LWA overpayment and they believe that the overpayment was caused by the Employment Department should submit a waiver request. More details will be included in the mailed notices, but you can also search for more information about overpayments at unemployment.oregon.gov. Again, we know these letters can be confusing, and we know how hard it is to not be able to quickly get answers. We hope this helps reduce confusion. We'll include links to these sample letters in our weekly Friday email updates to subscribers, and we'll also add them to our website. We've spoken previously about the new identity verification requirements that were created by the Continued Assistance Act. Oregon was already meeting those requirements, but we continue to implement more tools to prevent criminals from stealing from the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund. To further reduce fraud, we are improving and expanding on our identity verification process in a partnership with a third-party vendor. It will be available in English and Spanish, and people who speak other languages will also receive instructions on how to complete the process. People may begin to see this additional safeguard against fraud in the coming weeks. We are not going to give out too much information on the process or what it looks like, because we don't want to help fraudsters trying to target our trust fund. But we want to be transparent and let you know about this additional fraud protection that we and some other states are implementing. And a reminder that if somebody gets a 1099-G or other information from the Employment Department indicating that they filed a claim for benefits and they didn't actually file a claim for benefits, we want to know right away. This may be a sign that someone has stolen their identity and tried to file benefits in their name. You can report this to us using the Contact Us form on our website. Our next webinar is this Thursday, February 11th at 1 p.m., and we'll be sharing the latest information about the Continued Assistance Act, providing an update on paying PUA benefits, and answering claimants' questions. We'll also be offering simultaneous interpretation in Spanish, Mandarin, Russian, and Vietnamese. People can register for this webinar and watch recordings of prior ones at unemployment.oregon.gov/webinars. Our online PUA application is now available in Farsi. That means we have it available in 8 languages now: Spanish, Korean, Russian, Vietnamese, Simplified Chinese, Arabic, Farsi, and English. And wanted to let people know that due to the President's holiday, our offices will be closed February 15th. The Unemployment Insurance and PUA contact centers will not be accepting inbound calls, and benefits may be delayed. Claimants may not be able to seek their claims online until February 17th. We will have a limited number of staff processing claims, though, and making outbound calls during this time. In terms of the numbers, from March 15th of last year through February 9th of this year, the Oregon Employment Department has paid $7.4 billion in benefits. During that time, there have been about 647,200 claims just for regular unemployment insurance benefits. We continue to be very busy, and I want to thank our employees for continuing to work long hours to make sure that people get their benefits. We know Congress is debating future benefits, and we're watching closely so we can be ready to implement any changes and extensions and new programs, even while we continue to implement program changes and the new mixed earner unemployment compensation program that was created by the Continued Assistance Act. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, David. Now we are opening the lines to members of the media to ask questions. We will call on you in the order you RSVP'd. A reminder, if you are joining us by phone, please be sure to hit *6 to unmute yourself. If you don't get your question answered, please email oed_communications@oregon.gov. So the first question will be from Peter Wong from Pamplin Media.
Hi, you can hear me?
I can, Peter.
Okay, thanks. I've gotten a couple of people who have some particular problem regarding, obviously I can't go into those details and neither can you, but the best way for them to contact the agency is to contact us form.
That's correct. The contact us form is easier for people to get in touch with us, easier for them than calling in. And it's more efficient for us because we can triage those and get them to the right people that have the right skill set to address whatever the issues might be with their particular claim.
Okay, thanks. The other, I'm obviously not going to ask you about any particulars about what's going on in Congress, although I gather the House Ways and Means Committee is starting its hearings on its proposal, which I think they have a different end date than the president has proposed, and I know Senator Wyden also prefers the September date. I just have one technical question on that, though. There's a reference in the summary materials to short-term compensation agreements. Is that federal government speak for Workshare in Oregon, or are they referring to some other program I'm not familiar with?
No, you're right. The STC, or short-term compensation program, is what we refer to as Workshare in Oregon. And Oregon has had an operating Workshare for decades now.
Okay. Quickly, do you see any problems with, as I said, these details are not final yet, and I know Congress is probably going to cut it pretty close again to the March deadline. But from what you have seen, have you seen any problems on what's being considered?
I'm hesitating a little bit because it does sometimes depend so much on those little details. And certainly the more lead time we have, the easier it will be. That is one of the problems that we'll face, is the timing of knowing what the program is and being able to get guidance from the Department of Labor before the benefits are supposed to be paid. In general, it didn't look like, from the summaries that I've seen of what's being discussed right now, I didn't see brand new programs being created, which is certainly a more challenging issue than just extending the time frame of some of the programs. And some of the vastly more complicated options that have been discussed in the past, it doesn't look like are in the proposals that are being actively talked about now. So that's promising. But we really will have to wait to see what ultimately is passed to know exactly what we need to do in our systems to implement the new programs.
Okay, thanks. That's sufficient.
Thank you, Peter. Next is Lindsay Nadvich from COIN.
Hi, David. I was wondering if you could comment on the settlement that was reached in the lawsuit. There are a lot of time frames that it says you guys have to meet. I feel like those are things that you guys have been wanting to do since the beginning and haven't been able to. How are you going to meet those time frames, and what will be different because of this settlement?
So we have been focused on trying to get everybody their benefits and to get all parts of the system going as quickly and as smoothly as possible since the pandemic started. So I think you're right. This isn't a change in focus or a change of approach. We've been making a lot of good ground, and we are handling all parts of the process much more quickly now than we were, not only at the beginning of the pandemic, but even, you know, several months, many months into the pandemic. So we've looked really hard at where we are now, at the ongoing work of our dedicated employees, additional changes that we think we can make, and we put into the settlement agreement, we agreed to dates similar to what we've been doing publicly with our goals of what we think we can do. They're not easy targets to hit, but we know how important this is. So we're not setting easy to hit targets. We're really being aggressive with setting the time that is as early as possible for us to be helping everyone as much as possible. And we'll continue evolving how we do our work to meet those timelines, and certainly dedicated to doing them if at all possible.
And do you know, do you have an estimate of how many people were overpaid through the lost wages assistant program? And if you guys ultimately approve those, how would it be somebody's fault? Because you said if it's an error on the part of the employment department, they can submit that waiver.
Sure. So for all of the programs, there are different types of overpayments. The bottom line is if somebody gets benefits and they don't meet the statutory eligibility requirements, it's considered an overpayment because they received benefits and they didn't meet the legal requirements for it. Sometimes those overpayments are because they didn't give us information that we needed, or they gave us inaccurate information. Sometimes it's because of errors, and we've shared some of the issues that came about on the lost wages assistance. For instance, where some payments were made before everyone completed the certifications. And although the vast majority of those turned out to be people who are eligible, as we were quite certain they were, there were some people who were not eligible, and those are overpayments. So we're required to collect those. For the ones where it was not their fault, that's where the new federal legislation gives us the same kind of flexibility with the lost wages assistance overpayments that we've had with regular unemployment insurance benefits for quite some time, where if it wasn't their fault and it would create a hardship, we can waive recovery of those overpayments. In terms of numbers of those people, I don't have that in front of me, but that's something that we have an estimate about that we can provide.
So like a ballpark figure, you don't know, that's something you have to follow up?
So I don't have that number in front of me.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we will follow up though.
Thank you, Lindsay. Now, Kate Davidson from OPB.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
I can, Kate, go ahead.
Okay. I also wanted to ask about numbers. So just in terms of the PUA extension, how many people are receiving PUA payments successfully now? And how many are waiting for the changes?
It's hard for me to give exact numbers, and partially because it changes week to week. We knew that there were about 72,000 people that we had talked about who were facing that benefits cliff at the end of December. Most of those people were on PUA when that program was going to go away, and 59,000 of those were able to just continue receiving their benefits without any pause. Since then, we both have been able to start paying benefits to some of the people that did see some pause, but we've also had some people whose PUA claims then either used up all of the original benefits available under the CARES Act, or who they reached the one-year mark from when their claim was filed, and that's the programming work that we're doing now. I don't have exact numbers. We've been focused on getting the changes made. We do know that it's over 40,000 people that are getting PUA benefits. I don't have a definite number for the people that are waiting, but we anticipate the vast majority of them getting their benefits with, as I mentioned earlier, they should be showing up in the online claim system by this Saturday.
Okay. Do you have any ballpark? I mean, is it thousands of people below 10,000, above 10,000 who are still waiting?
I'm quite confident it's in the 1,000, and it probably is above 10,000, just given the numbers mm-hmm. of people seeking benefits. But that's really about as accurate as I could give right now.
Okay. And for the PEUC, is there any similar delays happening in the implementation there, as you're seeing with PUA?
We did have some. The PEUC coding work that was needed was done. There are some complications where people that were on PEUC or PUA need to shift back to the other program. So there can be some complications there, but all parts of the PEUC extensions from the Continued Assistance Act have been implemented. There are some of those claims where it takes some manual work on our employees' time as people maybe use up their old PEUC weeks and they have more weeks available, or they go from back and forth between PEUC, regular unemployment, and PUA, but we're working on those individual claims, and that's a pretty small percentage.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Kate. Mike Rogaway from the Oregonian.
Thank you. Hello, David.
Hi,
hey, it seemed like things went in the first weeks after the extensions were passed in December, things seemed to go fairly smoothly in the rollout of new benefits, and it has felt somewhat rockier over the last 2 weeks. Is that an accurate assessment? What would you say fundamentally has changed, if it is accurate?
I don't think anything has changed. We focused on doing the parts of the Continued Assistance Act that would help the most people the soonest. And we tried to give some predictions as to when we would have the different types of new programs under the new federal legislation available. Our team did a great job, I think, of getting those initial changes made very quickly, so there was no break in benefits. The additional $300 started paying out very quickly. Some of the other changes that need to be made, like the ones to the PEUC program that were much more complex, and the implementation of the changes to PUA were just more complicated parts of the program to implement. For instance, it wasn't just adding 11 weeks of benefits to everyone on PUA. It wasn't just updating the total cap on the number of weeks of benefits that each person on PUA could receive. Each claim really has to be looked at to determine how many total weeks they can receive under the federal guidance that we got for the Continued Assistance Act. So it was just that some of the programmatic changes were more nuanced and a lot more complicated. And I think I've shared before, kind of as we get further into this and we have more and more layers of the programs, certainly the testing and the opportunities for there to be unintended consequences grow. And it just does make it more complicated to make the intended change without it having an accidental impact somewhere else.
Good. Thank you.
Keaton Thomas, KATU.
Okay. So thanks, David. I appreciate it. One question that I had for you, again, Keaton with K2, is as it relates to last week we heard up in Washington, Governor Inslee signed a bill that provided some relief for the businesses as it relates to the, whatchamacallit, I'm blanking on it, the unemployment tax rate. Also, I believe increased the minimum for the people who are collecting unemployment benefits. I guess my question is just where are we at in the legislature? Are you having any additional conversations with lawmakers on bills that I haven't seen thus far? I think the two that I've seen so far have been as related to school employees. Have there been any further conversations about the unemployment tax rate or anything else?
Sure, Keaton. There have been a lot of discussions actually with legislators from both houses, from both parties. I think everyone's interested in looking at this, and there are some very active discussions going on about what the options are to provide additional relief to Oregon businesses as the legislators make their policy choice, and do anticipate there being a bill this session that will provide some additional relief. We have provided the relief that we really can without a statutory change, which we announced not too long ago, which is that for businesses whose unemployment rate went up by 0.5% or more between last year and this year, they can defer up to 1/3 of their unemployment insurance tax payments each month. And they can defer that through the end of June of 2022. So we have some flexibility, but we know that legislators are very interested in providing additional relief and were actively involved with those discussions.
And then the other question I had for you is Senator Wyden put out some news this morning dedicating some money for, I think, the federal government to work on an updated computer system. Are you aware of that? And I think part of what he had announced was states could take advantage of it if they so choose. Would that be something that, if passed, Oregon would want to take advantage of? Because I know that you're already in the middle of your own modernization process.
I haven't had an opportunity to look at the infrastructure announcement that was made this morning. It's something we certainly will look at closely. I know that there have been talks for some time about some of the national computer system that states have to link to. So we'll need to see if it's talking about updating that or if it's taking a different approach, but we're anxious to look at anything that can help us better get benefits to people and serve them more quickly, more accurately.
Thank you.
Okay. So I know that Dick's question was answered. He doesn't have a follow-up. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can, Tom.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks. I want to follow up on Keaton's question related to the Washington legislation. I was looking at some of the details, and I noticed that the projections are that the trust fund balance is going to be reduced by $984 million this year and $3.3 billion in 2024. And there's also authorization for the governor to request a loan from the federal government for $420 million. Can you tell me at what level you'd be comfortable reducing the current trust fund balance, which I think is roughly $3.8 billion? Would it be of the same magnitude that Washington State is looking at, or are you going to be more conservative?
So I can't give you a number, and part of that is because it's an elegant statutory formula that really looks not just at a one-year snapshot, but at multiple years to make sure that we don't have to borrow money. And that's one of the keys here. Many states have already had to borrow money, and we know that many more will need to. We want to provide as much relief to Oregon businesses as we can to use the reserves that we have accumulated over the past decade to ease the impact of this on businesses, but without going bankrupt and then having to pass on the additional borrowing costs to businesses. If Washington does end up needing to borrow the money that authorization refers to, then ultimately that could mean additional taxes for payroll taxes to the state in Washington. And it can also result in those businesses having to pay additional federal taxes. So we do think that there is some opportunity for significant relief to Oregon businesses, but I can't put an exact dollar amount on it. That's one of the things we're running a number of different models and scenarios to see what will provide the most relief and most long-term protection for Oregon businesses.
So my follow-up kind of leads to that issue in terms of when that information might be out. I think the revenue forecast is due 2 weeks from today, and I know that you're scheduled to do an updated trust fund forecast fairly soon after that. Is it fair to presume that the next trust fund forecast will include some of the provisions that you've just talked about as part of looking at what might be possible?
Well, our public-facing trust fund forecasts show, based on current law, what the projections are in current economic situations. When we start talking about the possible changes to the trust fund, there are a lot of different types of changes that can be made and lots of different combinations of changes. So until we know what policy decisions are being made of how to provide the relief, what parts of that formula to adjust, we probably won't be putting out lots of public-facing scenarios because we're running them pretty constantly with minor variations and in different combinations. And we want the team doing that work to really focus on seeing the impact as the policy decisions are being considered.
Once
we know what those are, that's something that we certainly intend to share to show what the short and long-term impact will be to businesses and to the trust fund.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. So those are all the calls that we have today. And so this call was recorded, and we will send it out to reporters at RSVP, and we'll post it on the Employment Department's COVID-19 website. We thank you for participating today and everything you are doing to keep Oregonians informed. Have a great day.
Thank you, everyone.